Today on CyberWork, our old pal John Wagnon, InfoSec skills author and keeper of the secrets of OWASP, joins me today to talk about the big changes to the OWASP Top 10 that happened at the end of 2021, as well as his own class teaching the Top 10, some job tips, study hints, and career pivots for those interested in these vulnerabilities. Also, find out why access managers are going to rule the world someday. That's all today on CyberWork. Welcome to this week's episode of the CyberWork with InfoSec podcast. Each week, we talk with a different industry thought leader about cybersecurity trends, the way those trends affect the work of InfoSec professionals, while offering tips for breaking in or moving up the ladder in the cybersecurity industry. John Wagnon has been a guest on CyberWork before. He was talking about InfoSec skills and some of the best practices for skills-based learning. And he recently recorded, and when I say recently, I mean about 2 minutes ago, he recorded a video for our Career Profile Cities series on the role of secure coder. For those of you who work in vulnerabilities, AppSec, DevSecOps, and other related fields, you're probably already aware of the fact that the Open Web Application Security Project, or OWASP, has done something that they don't do all the time or every year. They revised and significantly updated their top 10 list of the most common security vulnerabilities to reflect the current state of affairs. John teaches an OWASP top 10 class as part of InfoSec Skills and as a boot camp, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's a skills learning path. That's exactly right.
Okay. And he keeps very close tabs on all these updates. So whether you're knee deep in the vuln research or just curious about this top 10 list, this is the episode to listen to. John, thanks for joining me today. Welcome to CyberWork.
Chris, it's always a pleasure, man. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Oh, great. So it's been a while since your last episode. So I'll ask again to help our listeners get a sense of your personal history. How did you first get involved in cybersecurity and how did you come to create and teach courses for InfoSec?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, I mean, really right out of college or in college, my undergrad was computer engineering. So I kind of, you know, started off in that field. Yep. And then I was in the Air Force for about 9 years. I did computers, you know, communication stuff there. And then beyond the Air Force, I've done, you know, cyber threat analysis, you know, consulting for the Air Force and DOD. And then I've worked for a couple of different companies after that. And just, you know, so I've been in this for, you know, goodness, 20 something years now. Right. So it's been kind of cool to see the world change, you know, since way back when I started. But that's, I mean, it really did start kind of in college for me. And, you know, and that's not the story for everybody. There's a lot of people that jump in, you know, after the fact, or it's like, hey, I was a plumber or something, and now I do like computer security stuff. So, I mean, there's all kinds of ways to get into this thing. And then as far as teaching, I've always loved to teach. I've just enjoyed that. And so I got connected to InfoSec a few years ago and you guys were like, hey, we got these learning paths and all that stuff. And I was like, hey man, that'd be awesome. And there was a need for the OWASP. And so you guys had the need for the OWASP course and I enjoy that stuff. And I was like, hey, cool. let's get together, man. Let's do this thing. So it was a lot of fun.
Fantastic. So on an early episode of CyberWork, if you all want to go back, it's November 18, 2018 episode. I interviewed Jeff Williams, who is a major early contributor to the OWASP Top 10. So if you haven't heard it, I'd recommend seeking it out for a deep dive into OWASP history and the roots of it. But for expediency's sake, John, can you summarize the use of the OWASP's Top 10 list, what it tracks, and why a massive shifting and updating like the one we saw in 2022 is so important?
Yeah, no, absolutely. OWASP is an organization. It's an open community, and really they're dedicated to keeping the world secure. They're dedicated to keeping applications secure, you know, in the world today. Mm-hmm. And so it consists of volunteers all over the world. I mean, if someone's watching today and they're like, hey, I want to get involved, you totally can. So, So it's an open source community or just an open community and then, like you said, they do this, they do a lot of different things, but one of the things that they do, one of the popular things that they're known for is this top 10 list. And it's like, hey, what's the OWASP top 10? Well, it is the top 10 security risks, web application security risks in the world today. And the way that they figure that out is they go out and put out basically like a call for papers. I mean, it's like hey, organizations that would be willing to give us data, you know, they post it on their Facebook page and their Instagram and their Twitter and their whatever, you know, or send out emails. I mean, however they can get people to come back and give them information. And OWASP has earned a name and kind of a reputation, obviously, along the way that that now companies know to kind of be looking for the call for information, but they put out this call and they say, hey, organizations, tell us like what are the big problems you're seeing in the world today, right? And so then they just get all of this data that they compile together. And again, one of the fascinating things to me is it's the OWASP organization itself. It's a group of volunteers, and it's just, you know, people that want to make the world a safer place. And so they give up their time and they go through all this data and they say, okay, how do we take this data and turn it into what ends up being a top 10 list? And there's this whole methodology that they go through, mm-hmm. and they had to figure out what that methodology is. And so they put in a ton of time. So I really appreciate those guys. But ultimately what comes out of that is this top 10 list. And they say, okay, in the world of web applications today, these are the top 10 biggest risks that are out there. And so then organizations can, you know, look at that and say, okay, hey, I need to keep an eye on that stuff. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
And then to your point, you know, the list changes over time, and they don't publish this every single year. It's about, and they don't even have like an exact schedule.
Yes. Right.
So they just published one at the end of 2021, mm-hmm. Which as of this recording is just a few months ago. Right.
Right.
And then the one before that was in 2017. So it was like four years.
Yeah.
There have been some iterations where they waited like 3 years. So it's been 3 years in between. Some it's been 4 years. So it's kind of in the 3 to 4 year range.
Okay.
Then that's when maybe a new one comes out. But that list, as you can imagine, as the world changes, as you know, applications change, all that stuff, then that list is going to change, right? So that's why people are always interested in like, hey, what's the current, you know, what's the current security posture of the world today? That's what the top 10 list is. So it's a really good document.
So what were some of the more surprising changes about the OWASP top 10 from late 2021, whether it's vulnerabilities that climbed in the rankings, the ones that left the list, the ones that were just introduced? Is there a lot of weight to the numerical ranking of the vulnerabilities? Because I know things go up and down. And what does the reordered list say about the ways that vulnerability issues have changed and evolved or devolved over the last couple of years?
Yeah, no, great questions. So the methodology or the approach for this list was a little bit different than the 2017 or even years before that. And that goes back to what I said, you know, this group has to get together and figure out like, hey, how do we even approach this data, right? This data that has come in from all these organizations, which, by the way, there's organizations all over the world that just they're willing to just dump their data into OWASP and say, hey, if this can be helpful, then please use it.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So we appreciate those companies too that are willing to share.
For sure.
And so anyway, what kind of in a general sense, what OWASP has done in previous iterations of the top 10 is they would go out to organizations and say, hey, we want your data, but kind of keep it in the bounds of, you know, these certain areas, you know, like that's the most interesting thing to us as OWASP, right? So they sort of guided everybody. This most current one, the 2021 list, they took off the guardrails. They said, hey, just give us anything you got, just dump it on us, right? Which frankly turned into the largest data set that they've ever had in the history of the OWASP top 10, which is awesome. Uh-huh. So they had a lot to deal with or a lot to use. But also based on that, based on the kind of opening the aperture there, if you will, mm-hmm. and then the methodology that they used, they really were trying to go after what I'll call the root cause of an issue rather than like a symptom. So for example, the 2017 list had one of the risks that was on the 2017 list was XML external entities. XXE is how they abbreviate that. Mm-hmm. That was on the 2017 list. That was one of the top 10.
Yep.
But on the 2021 list, that XXE has been like integrated into or, you know, made part of the number 5 risk, which is security misconfiguration. And so just to give you an idea, they're like, hey, really the root problem of like an XXE vulnerability is that your security is misconfigured. You know, there's misconfiguration problems in your web application. And so then that these XXE kind of things pop out as a result of that. So we're going to kind of pull it down to the root. So I say that to say, when you look at the 2021 list It's a bit more broad in nature in terms of each mm-hmm. item that's listed on there. That's not true 100% of them, but they've really gone after the root cause rather than the symptom. And so you mentioned like, hey, are there some that have like, you know, changed? Has the list changed? Mm-hmm. A couple that I would point out is there's a new one, cryptographic failures. In fact, that's number two on the 2021 list. And again, yes. That's one of those root cause. And in fact, just to give an example on that one too, the number two on 2021 is cryptographic failures. There was another one on the 2017 list called sensitive data exposure. Mm. And sensitive data exposure has been pulled into like, hey, the reason that our sensitive data is being exposed everywhere is because the underlying cryptography has problems, right?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Sensitive data exposure from the 2017 list has been kind of combined into or loaded into, if you will, the cryptographic failures item on 2021. But there's a few that are still on the list. I'll point out injection. If you've been around a WASP top mm-hmm. 10 at any, for any length of time, you know, our good friend, the injection attack, right?
Oh yeah.
And so that's been on the list forever. It's been number one for a while, frankly, but it's now number three on the 2021 list, which is interesting. The number one item is broken access control. And so there's, this is my thought around that broken access control. You know, in today's world, you've got applications that are available, you know, to all kinds of different people all over the place. You've got people working from home. You got people working in the coffee shop. You mm-hmm. got people working at 35,000 feet in an airplane while they're flying. Yes. Right. Yeah. And yeah. so it's like how, you know, the underlying problem there is how do I keep, you know, access control around my application? Yeah. And so who gets to get in and who doesn't get in? And, you know, back in the day, it was like, hey, we all sat in our little office at work. And, you know, there was this, you know, internal, like trusted network, and anyone mm-hmm. coming out of that network, we trust them, right? Because they're sitting in the office. Well, now that doesn't exist anymore. Everybody's everywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's created a lot of issues from a security standpoint. So that's bumped broken access control all the way to the top. So that's the number one on the 2021 list. So
there, it is a weighted ranking though. So number one,
yes,
means,
I'm sorry.
Is a big one. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a great point. And just mm-hmm. a quick word on that. Yeah. Number mm-hmm. one, in terms of the data that was shared and all that stuff, number one is more critical. Like it is a bigger deal than number 10. Right. And right. so they are weight ranked. It's not like, hey, here's just 10 of them in no particular order. They yeah. are in a criticality ranked order.
Got it.
And frankly, not to shamelessly plug my course, but if you watch the course, then you'll learn a lot more about the methodology yeah. that they use and the mentality and the approach on how they figure out, hey, which one's number one and which one's number two. Right. So we go into yeah. all that. But then also I was going to point out quickly is the OWASP organization, because of all the input from all these other companies around the world, they have, of course, the top 10 list that they've put together. But I always like to say this, the OWASP top 10 list is not necessarily your organization's top 10 list, right?
Yes.
So you may have, you know, like, for example, cryptographic failure, that's number two on the list. That may be your number one, you know, or mm-hmm. injection may still be your number one, right?
Yeah.
And so don't necessarily take the OWASP top 10 and say, okay, well, then that directly maps to our okay. organization.
Yeah.
It's more of it's an awareness document that gives you an idea of the state of application yeah. security today.
It's the state of the world. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's mm-hmm. right. But you're right though, to point out again, it is a weighted list, you know, so number one is more critical. It's more severe than number 10 or number two, you know, whatever.
Worldwide.
So
right. Yeah. Order.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And so that also doesn't necessarily, it's not prescriptive in terms of the order that you address the issues within your own company. You know, it's not like Maslow's hierarchy of needs where it's like you need a home before you can start looking yeah. for love or whatever. It's like you don't have to, you know, repair broken access control necessarily before you get into, you know, number eight or whatever.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, yeah. Chris, some people find love before they have a home. You know,
that's kind true. Of right? Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
Who knows? It's not a requirement. No, yeah. But you're exactly right. You're exactly right. It's, you know, again, for your organization, you need to look at your own applications. You need to look at your own, you know, security posture and all that stuff, all the threats and vulnerabilities and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So Yeah. And then you need to kind of rank order for yourself. You may have a really critical security risk that's not even on the top 10 list, you know, right? Like maybe a really big deal for you. Right. So, yeah. So just kind of proceed with that in mind.
So I asked Jeff Williams this on the previous episode, and I'll ask you as well. And it might be a naive question, but why do you think these same types of vulnerabilities never go away? I mean, obviously just knowing about them isn't enough. So what are some safeguards that would cut down on the instances of these types of vulnerability in everyday work life?
That's a great question. I would say, there's a lot of old applications still out there. So, I mean, you know, again, we're in the world of web applications, right? Application security. And there's still a ton of old applications out there that, hey, business, whatever, created this thing back in, 2000, which for me, by the way, it sounds weird to say 2000 has been 22 years ago, but it is. So, let's say you created one way back then and all these new modern things or operating systems were not around then. But you just haven't gotten around for 1,000 different reasons. You haven't gotten around to updating that application, but it's such a critical application for your business. You know, maybe it's your billing application or it's your, whatever, inventory control and whatever. I don't know. And you cannot get rid of that thing. And so that's still out there. And, so that introduces a lot of problems, those types of things. Right. We had a conversation earlier in a separate video about secure coding, just that whole career path. And so anyway, so when people are writing applications, when they're creating these applications, if they're not using secure practices and they're just trying to, hey, the boss is on my back, I got to get this thing written, by this afternoon. And so it's just, okay, here it is, just have it, whatever. But that happens all the time. So then vulnerabilities happen that way, And so that's a reason that these things are just constantly popping up. You've got end users that don't behave properly. And that is, right. It's like, hey, I'm not supposed to open that thing or click on that link or whatever, but I do it anyway. And so you mentioned safeguards. I think a few things really are, they go back to the basics of what I just said. I mean, as an end user, don't click on the suspicious links. Don't open the weird, attachment in the email, right? I mean, that is still like phishing attacks.
They'll get you every time.
It is a massive thing. That is still like one of the number one, if not the number one attack vectors that attackers will use is just phishing because it still works, right?
Absolutely.
So anyway, don't use a strong password. Don't leave your computer unattended and just walk off in the middle of the airport or whatever. Right. So it's those kinds of things. Use another way. You could use multi-factor authentication. That's where, username and password, but then you have to like pull out your phone and punch in the little, code or whatever.
Totally.
So that's a good thing to employ. So those are some of the safeguards I think that we could put in place, just given the world that we're in. If you're on the development side, if you're like, hey, I'm creating this stuff, then you need to use secure coding practices. There's different standards that you can use that can help guide you. But you need to write secure code and that'll be your little part to make the world a safer place. Right. So those are a few things.
That dovetails perfectly into my next question for listeners not currently working in the area of cybersecurity or not in the industry at all, and are just watching this out of curiosity, but who find this discussion of the OWASP top 10 list and all the different types of vulnerabilities there are to be patched and secured. What can you do with this info? What types of career paths or job roles involve this type of work? Because it's not just, secure coding or patch management, but like, I assume that there's DevSecOps elements, there's access management and all these different things, but can you sort of walk me through some of these different career paths?
Oh, totally. Yeah. And this is not going to be an exhaustive list, because this computer, this cybersecurity world that we live in is just a massive place. And there's so many different job opportunities out there, which is a good thing, but also for someone that's just starting out, you may look at this, massive world and say, man, this is a daunting place. Like, how do I even get in or where do I start, And so some of the things you mentioned, patch management or secure coding or, some of these DevSecOps roles, that those kinds of things are absolutely, possibilities out there or open opportunities out there. I did a quick search of like a really popular career website the other day, and I just typed in like, software developer, or I don't remember all the different, some of the keywords I used, but I mean, there was a laundry list of these things. I mean, jobs open everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was everything. I think on the software developer side, I mean, I found there was like a farming equipment company that's like, we need to write some applications. There's banks, there's insurance companies, there's, you know, there's retail stores, there's all kinds of stuff that's open out there. So certainly you could be in software development, but you could do a number of things. Like you said, patch management. How do you patch these systems, and when do you do that? And, you know, especially if you have these really big, complex applications, do you have to kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, you're going to have to restart the computer, right? To like make them take the patch, right? Well, how do you restart the actual web server that's like serving up your data like all the time? Mm-hmm. And it's your business critical. So there's, you know, sometimes there's like maintenance windows where it's like, all right, we got to wait till like next Thursday or a week from next Friday or whatever it is, right? Before we can turn off this system and patch it up. But in the meantime, there's a massive vulnerability that's just sitting out there completely open for anyone to take advantage of. Yeah. And so there's some of that risk management. There's, you know, so there's a lot of different places you could start. I think InfoSec does a great job of giving different, you know, career paths or skill paths, you know, to say, hey, if you're interested, just take this path, you know, and that gets you into this world, and at least it can start to give you some ideas of where you might want to start. So,
yeah, I you're my, I think, 189th guest or something on the show. And I learn a lot, as much from folks as any of our listeners do. And I'm, you know, I was constantly amazed that, you know, there's entire jobs, careers, things with, you know, promotion potential for things like access management, making sure who has access to what types of documents or what parts of the system, you know, and there's just so much of living online now that there's so many different places where you can sort of pitch in and be really good at one specific thing that you like doing. And like you said, you can go anywhere you want with it.
I totally agree. I mean, that's a great example, the access management stuff. Mm-hmm. But then in fact, like we said on the OWASP top 10, broken access control is the number one out there. So, I mean, if you're an access manager expert or access management expert, then my goodness, you can write your own ticket almost, you know. It's like, hey, because everybody needs that stuff. And it's an interesting thing. You know, some people may look at that and say, well, I don't want to like, you know, pigeonhole myself into like, hey, I have to be this access management expert. Right. I wouldn't look at it like that. I would say, hey, do that, do a really good job at it, and then get to know that world, you know, and then you be like the expert. But then you can always like laterally move, or maybe move up or whatever it is, and, you know, do a little something else in an organization. So
see what else is interesting to you while you're there.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So don't be afraid that, hey, I'm going to pigeonhole myself and I'm just going to do nothing but access management or access control for the rest of my life. You know, that's not how it works. So
good. You're not chained to your desk. Yeah.
That's right.
Let's talk again about you. So tell us what students who enroll in your OWASP top 10 class will be learning about, what they'll be actively working with, what the assignments will be like, and what they'll be able to translate to their jobs or the jobs they want at the end of it.
Yeah, of course. Well, so if you take the class, you'll obviously learn about OWASP, right? So in fact, the very first, like, I hesitate to use the word lecture, you know, because it's, I feel like we're just having fun in there, you know, we're just exploring the space together. Right. So the first video kind of set is all about the OWASP organization, like who are they, where do they come from, what motivates them, all that kind of stuff. How do they do what they do? Right. And then, of course, we dive into the top 10. So there's one video per security risk on the top 10. And so in those, you learn about the risk, you know. So when you use broken access control, for example, what does that even mean in the world of modern applications today? And, you know, how do APIs, you know, play a part in that, and, you know, different application access problems, whatever, right? So we talk about that. So sort of the fundamental of each of the risks. And then, you know, I give you different examples, talk about how to protect yourself against, you know, some of these problems that arise out of these security risks. Mm-hmm. So you'll learn, you know, all of those things. And then, you know, talking about how do you translate, how would you be able to translate that to your job? Mm-hmm. Well, if you're, I'll go back to like a software developer. If you're a software developer, then you'll understand, you know, hey, as I develop code, then these are like these are 10 things I really need to kind of keep an eye out for, right? I need to keep an eye out and don't make these mistakes if you possibly can avoid them, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're not a developer, if you're just like an end user or whatever, it gives you a better idea of of the state of the application security world today. You know, maybe you didn't even realize that, you know, one of them is cryptographic failures. Like I said before, maybe you didn't even realize like how big of a deal that is, or that that was even a thing, you know? Yeah. I think it's just a good awareness path. If it doesn't directly translate to your job, it kind of increases your knowledge in that, in that area. So it'd be good to take either way. I would encourage every person on the planet to take it, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Why not? And to that point, we were saying before, like if you're in secure coding or you're in access management, you know, to be looking around while you're there, something like the OWASP, I think is just, it's kind of like this tower that gives you a vantage point to so many other, you know, so as you're learning that, you're also thinking like, okay, now you could go in this direction, you go in this direction. And it really is kind of like, you know, the perfect like fork in the road or whatever that branches off in all different directions. So that's great.
That's right.
So if you don't have experience in this area, but you've done your reading, you've learned about OWASP and MITRE and have a strong theoretical knowledge about patching and securing these issues, how do you acquire hands-on experience to show potential employers that you can do the work?
Yeah, it's a great question. Great. That's the age old problem. It's like, I need 10 years of experience, but how do I get that? You know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I've seen some job postings. It's like, hey, you need, 5 years of experience with this certain technology. And it was, and the funny thing is it's like that technology was developed like 3 years ago. So some people need to update their resume or not the resume, but the job posting stuff. Anyway.
Right. Or get a time machine.
That's right. You need to invent the flux capacitor. That's number one. And then,
all right. Anyway, you definitely write your own ticket for that.
That's it. I would say if you're, if you're a developer, if you're a web application developer, software developer, you can look at things like open source projects. Mozilla's got some really good ones. Yep. There's a bunch of them out there. VS Code. There's some different, a lot of different Python ones. And anyway, you just type in open source project on Google and you'll totally find a ton of them, or type it in on Mozilla, on Firefox or whatever. Right.
Sure.
But you can use those. And basically what these organizations have done, I use Mozilla, is they've said, hey, we're developing all kinds of different code and different projects we're working on. And these are different little tasks or different features that we want to build into our product. Right. And so then they just open that up to the community, to the whole world. And they say, if anybody has experience or can solve this little problem, then do it. And so you would take one of those, open source projects, one of those little tasks, and you would say, hey, I know how to write, in Python or Java or C# or Go or whatever, right? And then you would take that and you would, write an application, or you would solve that problem basically, right? And then you can take that and you hand it back to the company and say, hey, I've solved this problem for you. And maybe they accept it. Maybe they say, hey, we need to tweak it a little bit or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then, there you are. You've contributed to the project. And then that is absolutely gaining experience in this area. Right. If you're, you could do other things. If you're not a software developer, there's a thing called the Common Vulnerability Scoring System. And that scores, like if there's different vulnerabilities that pop up in different applications or different code or whatever software, then they'll assign it the CVSS score, like 10 is really bad and 1 is not so bad, kind of a thing. Okay. But there's a CVSS special interest group. It's the CVSS SIG, right? Because everything's going to be an acronym. And you can contribute to that. So you can just type in CVSS SIG on the internet or on Google or whatever, and you'll find it. And so you can request to be a part of that group, and you can either contribute to the group. Or even if you're like, hey, I don't really have anything to contribute, I just kind of want to sit on the back row and watch, you can do that too. And you can just follow along. Cool. But that gives you some good experience on like, hey, what's the state of vulnerabilities and, which which software applications or frameworks are problematic today, right?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. So that's another area that you could, you know, that you could look at to try to gain some experience without even, and that's completely independent of whatever job you have today, right? So mm-hmm. you can do that regardless of where you work. So a couple of things.
Okay. So I'm guessing that this type of vulnerability finding and remediation isn't usually a top of the ladder job. This isn't something CISOs do per se. But so if you do find yourself doing this type of work, what are the common career trajectories from here? What are the next steps for vulnerability managers and secure coders and the like?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, just, you know, I guess to be fair, some people enter this world and we'll pick on like a software developer mm-hmm. and they absolutely love it. And they're like, yeah. I just want to do this forever. You know, it's like, okay, just keep doing that forever, man. Be awesome mm-hmm. at your job. Mm-hmm. But some people are like, hey, I'll do that for a little bit. Now I've kind of got the itch, you know, to go, you know, or whatever, to go do something else. So, you know, you could always, let's say you're on a team of maybe software developers or on a, you know, vulnerability patching or, you know, whatever kind of team, yeah. then, you know, I would say, regardless of where you are, do a great job, you know, show up mm-hmm. to work every day, ready to work and, you know, give it your best, do 100%, right? Kind of thing. Yep. And you know, as they say, the cream will rise to the top, you know, and you'll get noticed, you know, by your employers. Mm-hmm. This whole cybersecurity world is just woefully understaffed. And so there's not that many people that are doing it. And so if you are doing it and then you do a good job, it's like, man, you've just hit the gold mine kind of a thing, right? So right. do that. But back to kind of the practical, if you start out, you know, in an entry level, then very likely if you do a great job, you'll work your way up to maybe like a team leader position, you know, or okay. maybe like some sort of manager, you know, hey, you're going to manage this whole team, whatever. You know, maybe you'll work your way into like a director level or, you know, whatever. I'm not trying to go through every single organization, but there's also like, you could start to get larger, you know, jobs like maybe an architect, or a, you know, those kinds of things. The architect, not necessarily like, hey, now I'm an architect designing buildings, but I'm a you know, cybersecurity
designing architect. The system of security.
Mm-hmm. I'm designing the infrastructure. Hey, this is going to be a cloud-based application, you know, with, mm-hmm. You know, remote users everywhere. And we got to figure out our access control problems and we got to figure out our, you know, whatever kind of cryptography issues we have, or, you know, availability and, yep. and, you know, efficiency and blah, blah. So how do you put all those pieces together? There's 1,000 pieces you have to put in place.
Yeah.
And so someone has to take a step back and like build that picture, like build that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And so that would be that's a really cool place to kind of end up. But in order to end up at a place like that, you need to have done like some access control. You need to be that access control person you talked about.
Yes.
You know, do the access control, do some of the cryptography stuff if you can, or do the, you mm-hmm. know, learn a little bit about the cloud, you know, environments and, you know, how those things work and just that kind of thing. And then after a while, you'll kind of look back one day and you'll be like, hey, man, I've actually learned quite a few different things. You know?
I know a lot of things. Yeah, right.
and then the boss is going to be tapping on your shoulder saying, hey, guess what? You're like our best person to architect out this whole mm-hmm. new thing. And you're going to be like, mm-hmm. what? And I would say, just from a personal perspective, this has been true in my life, mm-hmm. is if you have an opportunity to like kind of step into a new role, even if you're a little bit nervous about it and you're like, man, I don't know the first thing about that. Mm-hmm. I would encourage you, just do it anyway mm-hmm. and do a great job and learn. And you will find that, you know, that you learn a ton of new stuff. And after a while, you are going to look back and you're going to say, okay, I actually know a few things about all this stuff. So be willing to take the risk, you know, take the leap. Right. So it's a good thing to do.
I love it. As we wrap up today, John, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much for talking to me today. So as we wrap up today, please tell us more about, you have other classes that you teach through InfoSec Skills or your work with Fortinet or anything else you'd like to promote.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. It's mm-hmm. self-promotion time. This is my
absolutely.
Favorite.
Plugs. Time for the plugs.
That's right. No. So actually, I've done a couple of the different skills learning paths with InfoSec. And they're both the OWASP top 10. It was the 2017 list, now the 2021 list. So those are the two that I've done. And don't quote me on this. It depends on who was watching and when and all that stuff. The 2017 list, I think InfoSec may say, hey, at some point we need to just kind of archive that away because it's getting older. And let's just like highlight the 2021. So I can't guarantee that they're both out there at any time. But anyway, but the, one of them will be out there, you know, whatever. Okay. So get out there and check that out. So it's been a lot of fun. And then, yeah, just the work I've done, like I said, I mean, I've done a lot of stuff through the Air Force and, you know, some different consulting with the Department of Defense and right now I work for Fortinet, you know, it's a security company. They do awesome work. I worked at F5 Networks prior to that. And I can say with both of those companies, I got into that. I'll just tell my quick F5 story for a quick second. I got into F5. A buddy of mine was like, hey, John, we got this thing. And I did not know the first thing about F5, you know? And so there was definitely a lot of like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing here. What's going on? But I said, you know what? I'm going to do this thing. And so I jumped into it and I just, you know, kind of nose to the grindstone and I studied a lot. I learned a lot. I asked a ton of questions. And then, you know, as I look back on my F5 time, it was awesome. F5 is awesome. Then I'm like, man, I actually learned a lot of stuff there at F5, you know? And then now I'm with Fortinet. Fortinet's also awesome. Just amazing people. They're super smart. Then you know, it's a similar kind of thing. It's like, hey, I don't really know a lot about this stuff. I have now learned about the, you know, the overarching, you know, how does the internet kind of work? Like, what is a computer and just that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But to learn the specifics of that job, it's going to take a lot of work, you know, it's going to take a lot of studying and all that stuff, but that's okay. Cause I'm learning even more stuff, you know? And so I look at it as a good, you know, just a good personal building experience. Yeah. You know? So I would, again, that's why I encourage people just go ahead and take the leap and do it, you know? So in terms of promotion and all that, I would just encourage people take the top 10 skills learning crap here at InfoSec and hopefully you'll enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You think about the times when you were like most exhausted when you were trying something new and you just push through and then you're like, I can't do it anymore. And then you get done and you're like, wow, I suddenly am a different person almost at the end of it.
I know. I did that. I know. Mm-hmm. It's cool. But you got to do it. You got to start in order to do
it.
You know?
Yeah. So one last question, $10,000 question here. If our listeners want to learn more about John Wagnon and your OWASP courses, where should they go online?
Well, like we said, go to InfoSec and sign up for the OWASP Top 10 Skills Learning Path, and you'll see it there. Hopefully, you'll have a great time, and you'll be like, "Hey, you know what? I want to watch that all over again, like 10 more times."
Just leave it running in the background.
Just keep it running, just on an infinite loop. You know, problem. No problem.
Dulcet tones of John Wagnon. Yeah,
that's right. Just go to bed and wake up. That's right. And then in terms of connecting, man, I'd love to connect with whoever wants to. Probably the best is LinkedIn.
Sure.
So I'm out there on LinkedIn. I'm trying to remember the little URL. I think it's just / John Wagnon, if I remember right. But anyway, if you're watching this video, you kind of see what
I know how to do that. Yeah.
And you'll see on LinkedIn, right? If you need help on that, you know, whatever. But so LinkedIn's probably the best place to connect. Although I would say I'm on Twitter, although I don't really do a lot on Twitter. Yeah. I'm just kind of more than I'm one of the lurkers. Like, hey, let me just kind of watch. So I don't really post a lot on Twitter, but I am on there. Someone wanted to, you know, connect or whatever. So
great.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, John, thanks for your time and insights today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, man. It's been a pleasure. It's been awesome, Chris.
Great. And as always, I'd like to thank everyone at home who is listening and supporting the show. New episodes of the Cyberwork podcast are available every Monday at 1 p.m. Central, both on video at our YouTube page and on audio, wherever you get your podcasts. And I wanted to make sure you all know that we have a lot more than weekly interviews and cybersecurity careers to offer you. And in fact, for those of you who are interested in InfoSec skills, you can actually learn a little bit of cybersecurity for free on our InfoSec skills platform and our trial program here. If you go to InfoSecInstitute.com/free and create an account, you'll start learning right now with a cross-section of some of our hundreds and hundreds of InfoSec skills courses. You get 10 free cybersecurity foundation courses, 6 cybersecurity leadership courses, 11 courses on digital forensics, 11 on incident response, 7 on security architecture, DevSecOps, Python, JavaScript, ICS, SCADA security fundamentals, and more. So just go to InfoSecInstitute.com/free and get started today. Unfortunately, John Wagnon's, you got to go in and get the premium tier there. So you're going to want to after you see that. So
worth every penny, right, Chris?
worth every penny. Absolutely. So thanks once again to John Wagnon, and thank you all for watching and listening today. We will talk to you next week. How about some free cybersecurity training resources for you and your team? Just go to infosecinstitute.com/free to get ebooks, training guides, and more than 100 cybersecurity training courses, all free for CyberWork listeners. Go to infosecinstitute.com/free and start learning crucial new skills today.